Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm George Tamblyn for the appellant, and I'd like to reserve 7 minutes.
All right. You'd like to reserve 7 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, so you're only going to talk for three right now.
I hope so.
All right.
This is an important case for older workers in Washington, and after over 50 years as a lawyer, and loving what I do, I'm honored to speak for them. And I'm sure you appreciate the immense value of being able to continue to work as senior citizens, as I do, and the reason why our legislature has enacted laws to protect them against arbitrary firing because they are no longer young. The U.S. Supreme Court in McDonald has acknowledged the problems related to proving such discrimination against an employer who possesses all the facts related to motive behind the determination. And McDonald shifted the burden, creates a presumption which shifts the burden of proof from the plaintiff worker to the defendant employer under certain circumstances which are present in this case. A year and a half ago, our Supreme Court in Scrivener interpreted McDonald for Washington. The Simmons case is important because the court will decide how to apply the McDonnell-Scrivener decisions to the Simmons summary judgment.
Well, so here you did make out a prima facie case.
I think so.
And there was a legitimate non-discriminatory reason presented by Microsoft. So what was the evidence of pretext?
Facts presented by the plaintiff that she was over 40 at the time of termination, had been employed by Microsoft for 7 years. She had consistently received high-performance reviews, which is customary, included suggestions on how she could improve. She had received several awards for her job performance. One was awarded but not delivered to her because it came after her termination. Her boss, Mr. Arsenault, replaced Marnie with a younger worker who then in her early 30s and relatively inexperienced. This creates that presumption. Additional facts, shortly before she was terminated and after Ms. Young had been hired in the department, she had received good reviews from Mr. Arsenault. But the temporal connection between her the replacement, Sarah Young, arrival on the Arsenault team, and the change in attitude and performance reviews toward Marnie by Arsenault, that close connection is a fact.
Okay, that's your first 3 minutes. You have seven remaining. That's a good one.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ken Diamond, and I represent Microsoft. In our opposition brief, Microsoft explained why summary judgment was properly granted, and this morning I'd just like to focus on a few key points, answer any questions the panel may have. If ever there was an employment law case where summary judgment was properly granted, this is it. And in saying that, Microsoft means no disrespect toward Ms. Simmons, but the fact is that the undisputed record shows that there were significant performance issues, and the record is devoid of evidence by which a jury could reasonably conclude that Mr. Arsenault was substantially motivated by Ms. Simmons' age or race in making that termination decision. Summary judgment has to mean something. I think that Judge Patterson properly acted as a gatekeeper here and dismissed those claims as a matter of law. Her age and race claims would fail as a matter of law under any standard, but Ms. Simmons faces an even more difficult standard here because the same actor inference applies, and we spoke to that in our papers.
Well, you did, but then Mr. Arsenault in his deposition said he was not aware of her national origin. I mean, I think for purposes of summary judgment, you made much about the same actor argument, but I think we should set it aside for purposes of deciding the case. So setting aside your same actor argument, we've heard that the temporal connection between the termination and hiring of the younger employee to replace her is evidence of pretext. What's your response to that argument?
I think that's incorrect as a matter of law. It is evidence that goes toward the prima facie case, but it is not evidence of pretext. If it were, then as a practical matter, an employer could never hire someone from outside the protected class of the person who was terminated, or we'd have to have a trial on the issue of discrimination. There has to be more than that, and I think the case law is unclear on that, on the types of evidence which could present a tribal issue of fact, none of which are presented in the record here.
So when you're talking about the case law, are you talking about Scrivener and the examples of pretext?
Well, that's one case. Scrivener, of course, was a hiring case, not a termination case. So in talking about things like qualifications, that was in the context of hiring, not the context of termination. And I think, if I may, I think what Ms. Simmons does in her papers is conflate two different concepts. To the extent that she's trying to suggest that that Ms. Young and Ms. Simmons were similarly situated, that's simply incorrect as a matter of law. They're not comparators. Contrary to what was just stated, Ms. Young did not report to Ms. Arsenault. She was not hired by Ms. Arsenault. She was hired by Chris Hildebrand. She reported to Chris Hildebrand. She was reviewed by Chris Hildebrand. They were not similarly situated. And the fact that Ms. Young then was the person who ultimately replaced Ms. Simmons.
But didn't Mr. Arsenault hire her?
No, Mr. Hildebrand.
I know he did originally, but then for this position.
Correct. She then went into the interim position.
He hired her after she'd been, I mean, she was in the interim position, then she applied, and he hired her.
He did.
So what difference does it make that Mr. Hildebrand hired her originally when she was working for him?
Well, the point I'm making is, to your original question, is number one, the mere fact that Ms. Young was then hired and was younger than Ms. Simmons does not create a tribal issue of fact. It simply helps them make their prima facie case.
What you really mean to say is it doesn't create an issue of fact with respect to pretext.
That's what we're talking about. We're trying to focus
on
pretext.
It does not go to the issue of pretext.
Evidence that establishes your prima facie case is not evidence that creates a genuine issue of material fact as to whether the proffered legitimate reason is pretext.
That's what I'm saying. Those are two different things.
Right. And what case would you point us to, since you think Scrivener should be limited apparently to hiring cases, to provide us with a roadmap for what's sufficient to create an issue of fact about pretext in a termination case?
I would say the Grimwood case from the Washington Supreme Court. I would say the Hill case from the Supreme Court, although that did involve the same actor inference. I think the Rice case, the Court of Appeals, because in those cases there were other indicia which presented a dispute of fact that went well beyond who went into the role thereafter.
Well, that was true of Scrivener, too. I mean, I'm not sure I agree with your position that Scrivener's limited, but in Rice and Greenwood and Scrivener, there were statements that were made in addition to replacing the individual with a younger person.
Well, that's right. On the issue of pretext, when you look at the types of things that the courts do look at and do conclude present a tribal issue of fact in an employment case, those types of facts simply are not in this record. For example,
facts like comments.
Like comments, ageist comments, for example, like in Scrivener where the president made certain comments which reflected an alleged animus toward older applicants.
The same was in Rice.
And in Rice, where there were comments made, exactly. Or you could have a situation where there were conflicting explanations given for why the termination decision was made.
Now, there has been an argument about conflicting explanations, and perhaps you could address that. In the briefing, Ms. Simmons focuses on the declaration of Mr. Arsenal and his statement about business reasons to contrast that with the other reasons that were provided as to her termination. Are those conflicting, and if not, why not?
They're not conflicting. I understand that's an argument that Ms. Simmons tries to make, but it just doesn't get her where she wants to go.
Why is that not a conflict?
Well, there simply is no conflict in the record. When you look, number one, at...
Well, they're different. The reasons are stated differently. So why don't you address the argument that's been made that saying business, we are terminating you because we're unable to fulfill our business purpose versus we're terminating you because you are not able to get along with Mr. Sexsmith.
Well, those aren't conflicting, and I don't think they're quite that blunt or distinct. I think what Mr. Arsenault was saying was that Ms. Simmons was his executive assistant. I mean, it was critical to him that she performed her role properly, that she made his job easier, and his ability to move the business forward was being directly hindered by the performance issues that Ms. Simmons was demonstrating.
What was the role of Mr. Sexsmith, and why was there dissension between the two? Did they have overlapping job responsibilities?
Mr. Sexsmith was the business manager for the group. He was, as the record shows, at a level 64. Ms. Simmons was at a level 56. He had a higher role. He had more responsibilities. He had a more significant role in the group. They did need to work together, and there was...
Why did they need to work together?
Because Mr. Sexsmith, as the business manager, needed to interface with Ms. Simmons as Mr. Arsenault's executive assistant in coordinating scheduling and meetings and the types of things that move the business forward. And the record shows that when Mr. Sexsmith came on board, that Ms. Simmons had conflicts with him, and the record shows that Mr. Arsenault tried very hard and made express to her the need for her to be able to work cooperatively with him so that Mr. Arsenault could do his job and that would move the business forward. They go hand
in hand. I'd like to ask you just a quick question about the same actor inference. Do you believe that the law allows you on summary judgment to use the same actor inference as a mandatory inference? In other words, is it mandatory or permissive?
It's permissive.
It could never be the basis for summary judgment, could it, by itself? Because a jury could decide not to draw the inference.
Well, the mere fact that the inference exists does not mean that summary judgment should be granted. It simply creates a heightened burden for the plaintiff. In other words, the extent the plaintiff is able to present any sort of evidence that would go toward pretext, which we contend it simply doesn't exist in this record, but if it did in terms of what's legally material admissible, it would have to be reviewed with even more scrutiny in order to survive summary judgment, to present a triable issue to the jury.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Tamblyn, you have your 7 minutes remaining.
Thank you. I didn't quite finish my facts. I think an important piece of hard evidence is the 360 review that Marnie, when she felt her job was in jeopardy, asked to have done, which was a Microsoft sanction then. They've since withdrawn it.
What do you mean it was a sanction?
I mean, it was a tool that Microsoft used
for... That was something she could ask for when there was concern about her performance to demonstrate how people thought she was performing.
Yes.
And that's what she did.
And she did.
Okay, but that's not a penalty of any sort.
No. No, no, she asked for that, and she got very, very good reviews with one exception, Mr. Arsenault. he was way below the average of good reviews.
Was Mr. Sexsmith in that 360?
I don't know, Your Honor.
It was pretty important for her to work with Mr. Arsenal and Mr. Sexsmith, was it not?
Well,
in terms of the interlocking responsibilities for scheduling.
I'm not disputing that, but they had conflicts because of Mr. Arsenal had a very busy schedule, and a lot of people, and he wanted things on it himself, and then Mr. Sexsmith wanted things on it. And Marnie had the job of fitting it in, and he wasn't able to please Mr. Sexsmith because Mr. Arsenal had the final say, and that created tension. Mr. Arsenal, we had a heck of a time getting time to take his deposition. He's such a busy schedule. And furthermore, Marnie was not given specific counseling other than you have to get along with Mr. Sexsmith, she was not put on a performance improvement plan, and I think that's evidence. That is a tool that was available.
So was there evidence that other similarly situated individuals were put on a performance improvement plan?
At that time, Microsoft did use an performance improvement plan, and it was widely used. I can't say that administrative assistants were put on performance improvement plan or how many, but in my experience, the performance improvement plan, it was widely used then and still used to some extent.
And so is there evidence in the record that she requested a performance improvement plan, or is there evidence in the record?
You don't request one. It happens. I mean, you're told that you're going to be on one.
So is there evidence in the record that Mr. Arsenal had used that tool before?
I don't know, Your Honor. I haven't got an answer to that. I just know the tool was available. The real question, simply stated, after Sarah Young came aboard, Mr. Arsenal and Mr. Sexsmith wanted her to replace.
What's the evidence that supports that statement?
The time frame and the fact that she did replace her immediately as the temporary person. And I think the jury has the right to...
The temporal connection.
Yes.
Is there anything other than the temporal connection?
I think a fact finder needs to see both and hear both testimonies to be able to see...
Criticism of your client's communication skills and suggestions that she became angry too quickly and should improve her tone well before Ms. Young was hired?
There were those comments, but she also got good reviews. And, you know, there are very few people who work in a place like Microsoft who don't get angry sometimes and have a very few people who don't have a irritated tone at some times in their life, in a experience. So it's very difficult. That's a pretty tenuous criticism.
In my looking at the record, it looks to me like for about a year and a half, people were telling your client, hey, you've got a problem in this area and you need to do something about it, and she didn't address it.
I don't know.
I mean, the mere fact that she didn't do anything for a year and a half, would that provide a reason for letting her go?
I think it would depend upon a performance improvement plan would have been a clear indication.
It's not enough to tell somebody you should work on these things. You've got to actually implement a plan.
I would suggest, yes, that for an employee, that you don't have some other motivation to get rid of. I'm suggesting that these are factual questions for the jury, and the questions you raise
at the end, even when we're done looking at the pretext evidence and everything else, the judge gets to ask, could any rational juror find that the prohibited reason was a substantial factor in the employment decision? And that's different than any other summary judgment question I think Washington judges get to hear. So do you think that's an accurate statement of what a trial judge gets to do in a summary judgment in an employment case?
Well, Scrivener also says that summary judgment should be summary judgment in an employer to an employer is seldom appropriate in Washington law against Washington law against discrimination cases because of the difficulty of proving a discriminatory because of the difficulty in proving. We still have to prove it, and we still have to convince it. But the question is the have we raised by raising these issues that I've raised here? Excuse me. I guess I'm
through. You finish your sentence.
By raising the issues that whether the judge should decide that in a brief summary judgment hearing or whether a jury should see the actors and measure their credibility.
Thank you.